I'm Marty Moscone, and welcome to The Connection. Donald Trump demonized transgender men and women as part of his presidential campaign. After his inauguration, Trump signed an executive order declaring the U.S. government would only recognize a person's sex assigned at birth, either male or female. That was followed by a series of policies that limit the rights and dignity of transgender people. Our guest, Jennifer Finney Boylan, says the climate of hate against trans men and women today is worse than 25 years ago when she transitioned to female. She writes in the New York Times this week, "Now I live in a world in which men I've never met have decided that they know my soul, my true self, my true nature better than I do." Her groundbreaking 2003 memoir, She's Not There, was not just a bestseller. It helped to usher in the movement for trans equality. Boylan has written several memoirs since, including her new one, Cleavage, where she provides a unique perspective on being male and female, having had gender-affirming surgery when she was 44 years old. She writes about her changing body, her family, including her wife of nearly 30 years, and her emotional struggles when one of her kids comes out as transgender. Jennifer Finney Boylan is writer-in-residence at Barnard College, also president of PEN America, and joins us today on The Connection. Nice to have you with us on the show.
Hi, Marty.
Hi, and nice to have you with us on The Connection. We spoke many, many years ago when your memoir first came out. So let's go back 25 years when you first came out as trans, which you compare to being in the French underground, in that people were generally nice to you. What was the response?
Yeah, people were generally nice because in that era, no one had yet been issued formal instructions on how or why to hate me. And someone encountering a transgender person for the first time, like me, really had nothing to fall back upon except their own sense of human decency. I've often noted that my mother, yeah, from Devon, Pennsylvania, an evangelical Lutheran Republican, when I told her that I was trans, she didn't respond with concerned lectures about trans women in sports or hormone blockers for children. Instead, she put her arms around my weeping self and said, "Love will prevail." Mm. And she quoted 1 Corinthians and said, "The greatest of these is love." And so back in the day, when I was first on your show, and for which I'm still grateful.
Yeah, I remember that very well.
It was, people were generally kind to me, but it was, being trans was harder because, you know, the path that you had to tread was not particularly well blazed, and that the French underground part of it was that to find an endocrinologist, a surgeon, a psychologist, an endocrinologist, all the people that you needed to help you on your way, finding those people was really hard.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
easier now, but with increased visibility has come increased blowback, and that's where we are now.
And I do want to get to the blowback and where we are now, but do you also think that you were lucky? I'm sure that there were people who came out as trans as you did, but were faced with a whole lot of rejection and hate.
Yeah, I was lucky. I got to keep my job. My wife and I, you know, really, we did struggle with this for a couple years. It wasn't clear whether we were going to stay together or not. But in time, I found that I mostly, we returned to each other, I guess is the best way of putting it. And we embarked upon, in some ways, a new relationship, but in most of the ways that matter, a relationship that was the same, if not deeper, than the one we'd had before.
It's interesting now because on the one hand you have, for instance, Sarah McBride, the first trans member of Congress from Delaware. There's an actress up for an Oscar nomination who is trans. So on the one hand, there is a lot of progress in this sort of changing world, and I think for a lot of people it's just a struggle to keep up and to understand. On the other hand, there is this hatred there is this targeting, the demonization of trans people. How do you understand that and how do you navigate that?
Yeah, it's hard. In fact, I did an event just last night on this new book tour for Cleavage, which has the important subtitle Men, Women, and the Space Between Us.
Right.
I want to mention that to make sure people don't think it's a book about the history of breasts. Although, you know, I know that there are some readers who wish that that's what the book was about, in fact. But yeah, I did an event with Sarah last night, the Honorable Sarah, and a group of other transgender people in Washington, D.C. And I think it's something like, it's more than two-thirds of Americans think that they have never met a transgender person. Over 85% of Americans say that they know someone who is gay. So in part, the problem is that our numbers are so small and we are easily vilified, easily misunderstood. And also some of the, in my opinion, lesser important issues like trans women in sports, like availability for hormone blockers for children. These are some of the more difficult issues to get your mind around. And instead of those issues, and those are the issues that have defined us, I think, in this last political season. And what ought to define us is are issues that are very different. What ought to define us is our humanity, our, pardon the expression, normalcy, our desire to simply live our lives and get on with it. I think more people know a transgender person than they're aware of, but most of us, many of us, are afraid to be known because we're afraid of the backlash. We're afraid that people will come at us with all sorts of things that are not true.
I think, too, we are at a time of sort of greater understanding about gender and sexual identity, moving beyond the binary. It's really easy to understand the kind of either or of identity or even of sexuality. But I think what we're learning and maybe struggling to catch up with is just that people are more complicated than that. And biology is more complicated than that. People aren't just XX and XY. It's often a very interesting combination of letters.
That's right, Marty. I think the fact that this is difficult to understand is our chief challenge. And because it can take a little while to get your mind around it, instead we are left open to misunderstanding and to people wanting to define us. You know, I'm not a man pretending to be a woman. I'm a woman who was always female, but who had, I mean, look, I view myself in some ways as a very binary woman. You know, there was a before and an after. Right. And in the time after, I think I'm in my mid-60s now. I think I have at least as much in common with most women my age than I do with most of the guys that I know. So there are a lot of ways of being in the world. Being trans is one of them. It shouldn't be so hard for people to get their minds around the idea of individuals seeking their solace.
Well, in fact, you say in some ways it's a lack of imagination. That, I mean, it's more than that, but it's a lack of imagination.
Well, I don't think that the idea of looking in the mirror and not recognizing who you see should be so difficult to get your mind around. I mean, particularly if you're an older person, or if you're a person in adolescence, or I don't know, if you look in the mirror with any curiosity at all, I think you know what it is like to think, wait, that's me? Really? And so that's very much what trans people go through every day of their lives, at least until they have the opportunity to go through transition and become themselves. I want to be careful and make sure that people know I'm not speaking for all transgender people. Right. I'm not the emblematic trans person. I'm just one senior citizen who is very binary in her identification. And I guess that's one of the big differences now between people coming out now and people coming out when I came out, is that people coming out now, at least one of the big differences, is that there are more people identifying as non-binary, people who want to kind of have fun with gender or to kind of in some other ways kind
experiment.
of reject that whole system. But to the extent that there is an either or, I really feel very much like I made my crossing and here I am. And I don't particularly want anything from anyone other than the same love and grace you would extend to anyone else.
But are you concerned that trans people like yourself are going to lose rights?
Yeah, we've already lost rights.
If you're in the military, for instance, according to the new Pentagon chief, we don't want you.
I used the restroom at National Airport yesterday, which is technically federal property, and I used the ladies' room as I have for the last 25 years or more. Nothing happened. Everything was fine. In fact, actually, there was a guy who there was a man who was actually a pilot who came out of the was coming out of the women's room, and he was blushing, and he just said to me, "Sorry, I went in the wrong door." And I went into the ladies' room, and someone else was at the sink, and she looked at me and she said, "I don't know what he thinks he's doing." But anyway, look, I used the ladies' room, and so now technically I've broken the law. Is that a felony? Is that a misdemeanor? I don't know. But do they really want me in the men's room? Does that make me safer? Does that make men safer? Does that make women safer? I don't, it's just silly that we've been able to be defined by people who know nothing about us.
I mean, we're almost out of a break here. It's silly, but isn't it also dangerous?
It's absolutely dangerous. And if when I renew my passport, they insist on putting an M on there rather than the F that's been on there for the last couple decades, when I travel, I may very well find myself in danger.
Because someone's going to look at at you and look at the
Someone's going to
passport.
see and think, I don't know what they're going to think, but it's not going to be good.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take that short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. And again, our guest today on The Connection is Jennifer Finney Boylan, and she has a new book. It's a memoir, and she's written several of them, this one titled Cleavage, and it's subtitled Men, Women, and the Space Between Us. She is a transgender woman, came out about 25 years ago, and we're going to talk much more after this very short break. And you're listening to The Connection here on WHYY here in Philadelphia.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And if you're just joining us, our guest is Jennifer Finney Boylan, who is transgender. She's got a new memoir. It's titled Cleavage. It's about body image, identity, living in two genders, and the campaign against transgender America that is, or Americans, I should say, that is happening today. Jenny, I don't want to do a whole biology class, but you do have an interesting section. A lot of people have been writing about this idea that when you are born, you're either male or female, looking at chromosomes. And what happens over the development of a fetus is that over, at conception, you're neither male nor female. In fact, you're actually female. And the Y chromosome really doesn't enter the picture until about 6 or 7 weeks into conception. Again, I don't want to do a deep dive on biology, but it is interesting in terms of how we describe people as either male or female, and what the biology or what the chromosomes are doing.
Right, and it's also interesting that this order that President Trump signed defines sex at the moment of conception, when in
Right.
fact, at the moment of conception, we're just one cell. We're a zygote. We're a blob. There are some people online who had great fun suggesting that if there's an X chromosome, the message from that X chromosome isn't sent out till about the 7th week of the development of the fetus. There was people online who had great fun, thus claiming that President Trump had ruled everyone in the United States female, thus making Donald Trump our first woman president. Technically, that's not true either. Technically, we can just say at the moment of conception, we're all just an undifferentiated blob, and whether that Y chromosome sends out its messaging or not is yet to be determined. And there are people who have a Y chromosome who never develop as male because the Y chromosome doesn't, for various reasons, doesn't do its job. So what do we know? We know that sex and gender are complicated, and in fact, it is much harder to define maleness or femaleness than anyone thinks, and certainly more than many people would like. I think that's part of the reason why this issue creates such rage in some people, because we want the world to be stable and simple, and what we know is that there are men and there are women, and that's set from the moment of birth. And the fact that it is more complex than that, the fact that there's a whole world of information that needs to be understood, and that gender is actually not easily defined either by any of that, is frustrating to people and makes their world a little destabilized. But I mean, look, we can walk through it. Is a woman someone who has breasts? Well, what about women who have a mastectomy? Still female? Yeah. A woman is someone who has ovaries. Well, what if you've had a hysterectomy? Are they still women? Yes. A woman is, I mean, so a woman is someone who has two X chromosomes. Okay, but then what about someone who's XXY? And so on and so on. So anything that you look at, you can find an exception to. I think that the best way or some of the more interesting ways of differentiating gender are found in neurology and in brain structure. And there's some interesting research showing that transgender women, like me, have so-called structures in their hypothalamus that are similar to those of women who are assigned female at birth. So, look, I'm an English teacher. Do I have a great grasp of all of this? No. But I would ask people who just want to say, you're a man or you're a woman, to, get out a little more. Talk to people. Look around you. I mean, I'm an English teacher. Among other things, I teach Ovid's Metamorphoses,
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
one of our greatest and most ancient texts. The first line is, I will sing of bodies transformed into other shapes.
Oh, wow.
And
Perfect.
we know, if we know anything from Ovid, it's this: none of us is only one thing.
Well, let me go back and you write in this book that you knew at a pretty young age and you were James at the time. That's how you were born. That's how you were living until, well into your adulthood. But that you knew at a very early age that you were not James, that you were a girl or perhaps a woman or a female. What was that feeling? I mean, what was the, especially at a young child,
What was
what
that
was that?
feeling?
What was it that
It's
was saying
well,
that
I
to
can
you?
tell you, it's a sense of self that you know. At least in my case, I want to make again clear: this is just me, and there are people who have this insight much later than I did. But for me, it was just something that I had. You don't really understand fully the differences between male and female when you're, 5 years old. But I knew that something was wrong. And I also knew that at least my sense of it was that I better keep my mouth shut about it because people wouldn't like it. And as I got older and older, the amount of trouble that I was in became clearer and clearer to me. I mean, I always knew that I wanted to go through transition. I always knew that I wanted to be myself. That was not the question. The question was, what would be the consequence? Would I suddenly be a figure of ridicule? Would I be a target for violence? Would I lose my job and my marriage and my children and everything that I held dear? Would I have to give up on really every dream I'd ever had except for one. And I'm amazed now when I see, young children coming out. I did a book signing last night where a woman said that her child had come out at age 4 and essentially socially transitioned at age 4. I said, and that child is now 12. I said, how's she doing? Mom said, she's great.
I'm curious too about again being a young person and whether you felt you had to, were you play acting? Were you, pretending to be male?
Yeah, I felt a little bit like I don't know what, like I was operating a robot or something,
Right.
that I was having to put on the show every day. Now when I wake up in the morning, like most other women my age, I don't really think about gender first thing in the morning, about, oh, now I have to go and put on this show again. I get up in the morning and I have my coffee and I listen to public radio and life is good.
That's good to know. And
And a big shout, and while we're here, a big shout out to everybody at WHYY in Philly, my hometown. I thought I wanted to get that in. That's another special part of being on your show today, Marty.
Well, thank you. And let me just quickly reintroduce you. Jennifer Finney Boylan is our guest. She is a transgender woman, and she's got a new memoir. It's titled Cleavage: Men, Women, and the Space Between Us. You described going to a high school reunion, which is always a fraught thing to do at almost any age. But I thought it was it. I liked your perspective on it because you saw these boys, you had gone to a boys' school, that they struggled as well, and that they had their own struggles in their own life. One of them had had a car accident that made him disabled, and others that were struggling with parts of their life. This idea that, that we all have to struggle with. Sometimes it's identity, sometimes it's other parts of our life.
When I describe, when I talk about trans issues, sometimes it's also worth mentioning that I lost a large part of my hearing about half a dozen years ago,
Oh.
and that I've learned the ASL symbol for being transgender is really interesting. It's you kind of make your hand into like a flower. You put all of the fingers and the thumb together, facing down over your left breast. And what you do is you bring that hand out, and as the hand comes out, the fingers open, just like a flower opening. And then you put your hand back with the petals, so-called, of your hand facing upward, as if having felt the sun on this flower, it can now go back in your heart, facing the right direction. And I mentioned that. I hope I have described it well enough for people listening. I describe that because it does mean in ASL transgender, but it also, I think, is kind of a visual way of understanding that we all have something in our hearts that might be unable to blossom because it's why? Because it's in the dark. It's facing the wrong way. And the journey of our lives is to bring that thing out into the sun and to let it shine, and so that we can thrive. I think everybody knows what it's like to have something in your heart that you cannot share with other people because you're afraid, because you don't have the right language, because you're uncertain of how other people react. And yet, there's a quote from the Gospel of Saint Thomas, in which he says, if you do not bring forth what is within you. What is within you will destroy you. If you do bring forth what is within you will save you. I go on at great length about this simply to make the point that what transgender people experience is different in kind, but not in degree from what I think everybody else experiences. The journey, the adventure of life is to find the courage to find that thing that's in your heart, bring it out into the daylight and let it thrive. Let it bloom.
You write about this, and maybe there are I'm sure there are generational differences when it comes to people who are transgender, but that early on you were maybe self-conscious or wanting to make your voice sound a certain kind of way or learning how to walk, quote unquote, like a woman or like a female. Do you think about that stuff now?
I think about some of it. I worry about my voice. I have a cold right now, but I'm also aware that my voice is androgynous at best, and people listening to this on the radio might think, well, she doesn't exactly sound like Dolly Parton.
None of us do, but
And
yeah, right.
when I first came out, I went through voice training, and I did I was able to speak, and I'll do a little bit of it here. I'm not sure I can completely replicate that voice now, since I so very rarely speak in this voice. But I used to speak like that, and it didn't feel right to me. Plus,
Yeah.
as an
I mean,
actor, I
that's
couldn't
a
reach.
very tentative sound, almost stereotypically tentative
Yeah, I
sounding
couldn't reach
female
the back
voice.
row of the lecture hall that I was lecturing in. So anyway, so there was that. But the one thing that I really still struggle with, is, in addition to my voice, is weight and food and body image. I've put on maybe 15, 20 pounds since last I was on your show
Yeah.
over 20 years ago. And that's okay, because I earned every one of those pounds. I like to make pizza. I like to cook. I like to be with my family, eating and drinking. That's all good. But it also means that, my clothes don't fit exactly the way I want them to. And I worry about, I was on a radio show last week, and before I was on the show, I weighed myself on a scale. And I was like, wait, Jenny Boylan, you just weighed yourself before going on the radio? What's up with that? And what's up with that is just the way, even as a feminist, even as someone who knows very much what I need to be aware of and fight against, it can be hard sometimes to resist all of that. But I'm doing my best.
Well, let me quote something from your book, and as I said, that you have lived as a male and a female, but you say, I think of all the differences between manhood and womanhood I've experienced, there's nothing more profound than the way that men keep their emotions bottled up and women let them loose. There are advantages to both approaches, I guess. That is such a stereotype, but
I
it's
know it's a cliche, and I want to be careful. It does no one any good for people to think that transgender women are dreaming of being a stereotype. What is true, though, is that being a woman in this culture means that you have to fight against certain things. It also does mean that you're at the mercy of hormones to some degree, and I can absolutely assure you that estrogen, if it does nothing else, keeps your emotions very, very close to the surface. And I find tears are very close at hand, and sometimes fall for no apparent reason whatsoever. But certainly in my generation, and growing up in the 70s, on the main line, the guys that I hung out with, we did not sit around talking about our emotions. I hate that this is true. I hate that it's a cliche, but we had a friend who had a severe nervous breakdown, had to drop out of school. We never talked about it ever. Never said what was that like. Never talked about it. I had a friend whose father died. I had another friend who had severe troubles reading. We didn't talk about any of that stuff. Instead, we drank a lot of beer and we talked about the Grateful Dead, which, by the way, was not lacking in fun,
No,
because
no, no.
to some degree it was nice not to be at the to be able to kind of put your emotions in a cubby hole. But it's definitely a thing that I can no longer do. And it might also have as much to do with getting older as it does with hormones. I mean, who's to say? It may be that the biggest difference that is come my way is not going from male to female, but going from someone who is young to someone who's not so young.
Yeah, a very humbling experience to grow older. But I'm wondering, and we're almost up at a break here, so I hate to almost ask this, but let me just do it anyway. The notion of passing and being authentic. I mean, was your goal to pass, or was it to be your authentic self, or some combination of the two, or
Right. Well,
do
that's
they cross
I
each
mean,
other out?
yeah, the question of passing is freighted, to say the least.
Indeed.
And it's not just trans people who have to worry about it. I think people who are Jewish can worry about being on the receiving end of anti-Semitism based on how they look. You know that old cliche, that's funny, you don't look Jewish.
Right.
I mean, you know, any minority group that you think of, the degree to which you can pass as the majority culture can, to some degree, determine whether or not you are on the receiving end of bigotry and violence. So for me, passing sometimes is a matter of safety, but I can't say that it was, you know, a lifelong goal. You know, I
Sure.
just wanted to look like myself. I'm kind of a, I look kind of like a rundown Joni Mitchell at this era, which is, can I just say, it's not a bad look.
Not a bad look at all. Jennifer Finney Boylan, our guest today on The Connection. She's got a new book. It's called Cleavage: Men, Women, and the Space Between Us. And she is transgender. Much more to talk about after this very short break, including more about her family and her daughter, who is also transgender. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Connection here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Jennifer Finney Boylan. Her new memoir, Cleavage, is a humorous and honest account of her life as an older woman looking back on her younger self. She explores her experiences learning to walk and talk like a female, her complicated response when one of her kids came out as transgender, and we've been talking about the climate of hostility towards trans women and men. Well, let's talk a little bit about you've been married, what, 30 years, something?
35 years, I think, maybe 36 years.
Yeah, to a woman named Dee Dee. And I wonder, as you transitioned, how did she transition?
That's a good question. She did transition too. We moved from a marriage of a man and a woman to a marriage of two women, and you know, it was hard, but in the end, what each of us had fallen in love with about the other, originally, prevailed, and our love for each other seemed to transcend the bodies in which we found ourselves. And if that sounds hard to get your mind around, can I just say,
Yep.
if you have the same marriage at age 70 that you had when you were 20, your marriage has probably failed. You know, we met, if you get married as a younger person, as I did, you're making a pledge to love, honor, and obey someone who 50 years later might well be unrecognizable to you. And in fact, that's the great thing about marriage, that you embark upon this adventure together, not knowing what the future will bring. And so this is what was brought to our marriage, but other marriages will face other challenges. And the question of a successful marriage is not how can we keep things the way they were forever. The question is, how can we embrace the changes in each other and come out stronger?
Your kids call you Maddie, which I guess is,
They do.
which is
That's...
actually very clever. I guess mommy, daddy kind of put together
Well,
in.
yeah, that was we. They were figuring that out at the dinner table. My older child came up with that, saying, "Yeah, that's like Maddie's like half mommy and half daddy." And I know a girl at school named Maddie, and she's cool. And that's when Sean, our younger, said, or we could say Dommy, but Dommy
I
didn't
like
last,
Maddie.
but Maddie has indeed.
Well, you have two children, and one is transgender. Zai is her
Yeah,
name.
Zai came out as trans, and when she came out, I flipped out because, well, for one, I didn't see it coming.
Right.
And for two, it's just, you know, look, I feared My first thought was, oh, did I make this look like fun? Did I make this look easy? Because and I think, as I said earlier, that I have been very lucky. I've surely not suffered as much as many of the other transgender women that I know. But it's a hard life, even in the best of scenarios. And you don't want your child's life to be hard. And I know firsthand exactly how difficult this can be. So I really, it really freaked me out.
You said you didn't see it coming. It just, I mean, like, I think, like a lot of parents, they don't sometimes see things coming, but it just never sort of entered your consciousness.
I mean, I guess I'd thought about it over the years, but she had never expressed this as an issue. And what she said later was that she was afraid to come out because she was afraid that I would think it was all my fault, which in fact is exactly what I thought. And so we came out fine on the other side. But I will say that one thing that Zai, or in her transition, a couple things are different. First off, she didn't want any advice from me, okay? Because,
Spoken like a true child, right?
yeah, well, it was also generational that she didn't want to be a 2003 era a transgender woman. She wanted to be a 2020 era or 2018. I forget, it's something. I guess she came out 2018 or so. Also, if I look at She's Not There now, I f feel. I mean, I'm proud of that book, but I'm also aware there's kind of an air of apology
Yeah,
and
isn't it?
yearning, almost a desperation to be understood. And I'm explaining it all for people. And a younger generation now, and not just my own daughter, but my students at Barnard, I see a younger generation of transgender people. They are not apologizing. They are not explaining. They are like, this is who we are. We're here to stay. Get your mind around it. And it's, I think a younger generation doesn't feel it's their responsibility to explain who they are. And that's a big difference because I felt very clearly when I came out, that I had to kind of walk everybody through it and show that I was worthy of their respect.
You write something here. I underlined it because I thought it was very honest on your part. On your part, you said, "I wished I'd had a little more insight into the pressure I was putting on my sons to succeed as men. Look at them," I suggested to the world. "Look how straight they are, how normal, how exceedingly well adjusted." It was as if I was trying to use my sons as evidence that I was not a bad person, that each of them, in his own way, represented a second chance for me, one last shot at getting the man thing right. And I mean, I appreciated your honesty on that. And I think, all parents try to struggle to let their children be who they are, but also have hopes and expectations on the other side that can sometimes feel like pressure.
Yeah, I think we sometimes use our children to prove something about ourselves to the world. Like, look at the children that I raised, and that any success of theirs is due to me, and any failure, I think we feel is, our fault as well. I mean, and obviously parents are responsible in such a large measure for who their children turn out to be. But, look, our children are here to live their own lives and not to be some sort of nether version of ourselves. I'm not proud of the way I reacted when my child came out, but I think in some ways it was not atypical of what many parents go through. And it certainly made me think with a little more sympathy for parents who are struggling when, if and when their child comes out as trans, that parents should know that they should be forgiven for struggling because it is hard, in fact. But if you hang out long enough and love your child enough, I think you will find that they will thrive as they become themselves.
So, how different is your relationship with Zai today?
I think it's very close to what it was, although it's also. I mean, she's also in her 30s now. Once your kids are up and grown and, out living in the world, it's a diff that's a different relationship too. But I can say that Zai has succeeded in the world. She is has gotten her master's degree as a clinical therapist, and she now has a clientele of young LGBTQ people to whom she offers guidance and therapy. And I'm very, very proud of her and both of my children.
The New York Times had an editorial titled "Trump's Shameful Campaign Against Transgender Americans." And let me just quote something from it. And they write, "It should be recognized that society is still grappling with the cultural and policy implications of the rapidly shifting understanding of gender. There are some issues, such as participation in sports and appropriate medical care for minors, that remain fiercely debated, even by those who broadly support trans rights." You referenced this earlier about just the, you know, this complicated world that we live in, and you know, trying to be an ally, but at the same time, maybe having a different opinion about women in sports that confers a kind of advantage. I mean, for some sports, puberty does confer a certain advantage for someone who is hasn't transitioned until.
Yeah, fair enough. But please tell me that the people who are so concerned about women, about trans women playing women's sports, tell me that these people actually care about women's sports. Tell me that before this issue became such a useful political tool, tell me that these people had spent a single second thinking about women in sports. It's really not. It's with the women in sports thing, the trans women in sports thing, they finally found a way to divide people and to divide progressives. I agree with that editorial that many of these issues are unresolved,
Right.
but to use that as the defining issue to otherize and demean a very vulnerable group of people is just obscene.
And truth be told, we're talking about literally a handful of athletes, you know, in terms of the big picture, the big issues at stake.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the conversation that we need to be having. The conversation we need to be having is one about humanity and love and showing kindness and grace to people who are really suffering. If you have a theory of the world that doesn't reduce the suffering of people who are really in trouble, I think what you really need is a new theory. So, you know, fine. We can have a conversation about trans women in sports. It's complicated, and in the end, I think trans women should be allowed to play sports. But let's say we just say that, okay, no more trans women in sports. If we take that issue off the table, now will you fight for our humanity? Now will you fight for our desire to be to live without discrimination, without the threat of violence, without being, the butt of every smart comedian's joke. It's just a diversion. And the people who advocated this as the defining issue knew very well that it would be a diversion. And unfortunately, it succeeded.
Fair enough. I wonder though, where, I mean, do you think that it's going to get worse for trans people? That is that their life, your life, is going to be made more difficult? Or
Yeah.
are we going through a kind of spasm until we get, you know, we get to this other side?
I think it's going to get worse, and that this is a very difficult moment. And trans people are the canaries in the coal mine, my friends, because it certainly won't end with us. So the goal is to erase us from the public sphere, but there is absolutely every commitment to overturn Obergefell and to end marriage equality. There's every intent to end, legal immigrants to this country. There's every, I mean, there's a whole campaign. And what is the campaign against? The campaign is against difference. I mean, what is DEI a synonym for, really? Diversity, inclusion, Are these really such terrible things? And fine, we can talk about maybe DEI. There have been excesses. I'm willing to have that conversation. But what we're really doing is saying that we get rid of all of that. The only people who fit in this country are some sort of what 1950s nightmare dad. Is that really the world we want to live in? I want to live in a country in which we welcome everybody and in which it is okay to be yourself, in which it is okay to walk down the street as exactly who you are and who you dream of being. I mean, it seems to me that that's very American, and that the idea that we should all be somehow suppressed and repressed to fit into these very narrow binary definitions of man, woman, citizen, it's not going to end well. But look, as Bruce Springsteen sings, hard times come and hard times go. These are hard times for people like me and for many of us who are kind of visibly different in this country. But this is not the end, and we'll find our footing, we'll find our grace, and we're going to get back in the game and get back to the serious business of making this the country that we all love.
Let me raise another thing, which you actually raise in your book as well, about the connection between trans rights and abortion rights, having to do with bodily autonomy and choice. Flesh that out for us.
Yeah, well, it's just, I mean, trans rights are in some ways the flip side of the abortion rights movement, because what is the question? The question is, do you have the right to make decisions about your own body? And apparently, this current administration would say no, that you don't have bodily autonomy, that people that you've never met have a better idea of who you are than you do, and what's good for you, and what's good for your family. And again, it just strikes me as fundamentally un-American. One reason, again, why the trans thing I think has stuck so hard as a thing to cleave Americans with is because the abortion battle was apparently won. So what do? We have to get back in the game, and we have to keep fighting. And this is not how it ends. This is how it begins.
You quoted your mother earlier, and I want to do another quote from your mother, where she said, "It's impossible to hate anyone whose story you know." And you have written several memoirs. Is this your way of wanting us to know who you are? If you keep telling us who you are, if you know what I
Well,
mean.
what I think is that there are a number of different ways of opening people's hearts and educating them. And one of them is just by giving a lecture, by telling people all the facts and figures and hoping that they will take it seriously and write it down. And in storytelling, that's called, telling rather than showing.
Right.
Showing means that you tell a story, and that someone becomes, instead of an issue, they become a human being. I co-wrote the novel Mad Honey with my friend Jodi Picoult 2.5 years ago, and that book, even as a novel, has sold more than 1 million copies and has opened many hearts, because there is a character in there who's not so unlike me. And when you hear something in a story, there's a way in which it becomes true. And it's the magic of storytelling, and there's really nothing else like it.
And we're almost out of time here. Do you have another memoir in you, or are you
I
done
think
with
we're done with
memoirs?
memoir, but I certainly have more novels. I'm hard at work on something new that, just like Mad Honey, came to me in a dream. And I hope you'll be seeing that in the next year or two. But in the meantime, here's cleavage for people to read: a book about men and women, space between us, and the differences between men and women in everything from love to loss to food to fashion. I hope that it will open people's hearts and make them laugh. As Charles Dickens said, make them laugh, make them cry, make them wait.
Well, on that note, Jennifer Finney Boylan, thank you for joining us today on The Connection.
Marty, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And again, her memoir titled Cleavage, Men, Women, and the Space Between Us. Our engineer today has been Al Banks, and The Connection is produced by Paige Murray-Bessler and Debbie Bilder. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.